GHRT Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Mike and Nate and Harrison teaming up to help you sell your home faster and for top dollar.
Miles Thieman, our guest co-host in for George this morning on the PDQ Door telephone line. Busy guy, but affording us some time. Dr. Noah Nesson of Penobscot Community Healthcare, PCHC, with some insight into how we're responding to COVID-19.
Good morning, Dr. Nesson. How are we doing flattening the curve?
Good morning. We're not doing nationally as well as we'd like to do. We're over 46,000 cases, over 580 deaths from COVID-19. And if you check the data, we're going to increase by over 10,000 cases today. Probably by tomorrow it'll be 11 or 12,000 new cases. And in 3 days we will surpass China for the total number of cases. And we have a fraction of their population. So as the World Health Organization warned today, the United States could become the epicenter of the pandemic, and that's not good. So we need to redouble our efforts at flattening the curve, at social distancing, at really taking advantage of this time, especially in a place like Maine, where the disease is not, at least in confirmed cases, is not as widespread as in a place, say, like New York. And we're at a time when social distancing really can slow it down.
A lot of people might get the disease, but is there a guarantee they're going to lose their life, doctor?
No, of course not. Again, the majority of people who get the disease will survive the disease, and a very significant percentage of that group will have mild to moderate disease. Most people can manage this disease at home, the problem is that the vulnerable population, people who are older and people with comorbid health conditions, are susceptible to this disease in its more severe form. And the complications of that are both the unfortunate risk of death, which may be, maybe 1 to 2%. Even at 1%, that's 10 times the mortality rate of influenza. And the strain that places on our healthcare system. ICU beds, hospital beds can be overwhelmed in a pandemic like this, even though it's only a small percentage of people who get seriously ill with it. The numbers are so big that it overwhelms the system. And of course, we're still struggling with the supply of personal protective equipment. So that makes our healthcare workforce vulnerable to this disease. And even if they do okay with it, it means they're out of work. And that's very problematic as well.
Is the state of Maine doing the right thing?
I'd like to see the state of Maine go a step further and issue a stay-at-home order, similar to what Bangor has done. Bangor didn't issue a stay-at-home order, but issued enough restrictions that really only people working in essential businesses are traveling to work if they need to. Other people in non-essential businesses, if their work affords them the opportunity to work from home, can work from home. But it results in a more widespread, systematized social distancing than the rest of the state has in place right now. And I applaud the city council for taking this stand at this time. As I've said, it's not an abundance of caution. It's an appropriate precaution for preventing the spread of this disease. Unfortunately, if it's only done in Bangor, it won't be as impactful if it were statewide. And I and other providers have signed a letter to the governor asking her to implement a statewide shelter-in-place order.
How do we balance the economic concerns?
That's a really good question. And there are consequences to all of these decisions, of course. And in any other circumstance... those would have to be weighed more heavily, even at this early stage of an epidemic. But this is a pandemic, and it's a pandemic that will overwhelm, if we aren't able to flatten the curve, will overwhelm both our economy and our health and our healthcare delivery system. And so at this stage of things, I think that notwithstanding those economic concerns, which are real and are very, very serious, that the decision has to be weighted much more heavily toward the costs of the healthcare impacts and the health impacts of this pandemic. We'll learn from China and Korea in the coming weeks what it looks like after you've been able to flatten the curve and as you start to loosen the restrictions, and that will help guide us in our decision-making going forward. And as we know, Congress is working through a process of a relief plan that obviously has a huge cost associated with it, but is going to be necessary to sustain businesses once we're through the worst of this.
Talking with Dr. Noah Nesson of PCHC, I want to share with you a comment that a listener has shared with us. Your words are unsettling, and they can cause the panic that's leading people to buy all the flour, and now they're finally woke up, and by the way, and bought the yeast and everything else they need to make bread. I don't know, by the way, if Miles, if you heard this, or Dr. Nesson, there was the big run on flour, and then grocers were coming back and saying, yeah, but they're not buying the yeast. They're not buying anything else to bake the bread. And then they came in and finally caught up. Oh, I guess I got to go back in and buy yeast. The concern is...
There's just been a bunch of people preparing for Passover and making matzah.
Yes, unleavened bread. The concern is that even expressing what could happen and the need for such social distancing, even a shelter in place, that causes panic. And that's what's driving people to go to the grocery stores and freak out.
No, it's a really good point, and it's always challenging to understand what's the proper balance between providing important information so people can make reasonable decisions about their health, and decision makers for businesses and for government can make choices that help protect the health of the citizens of Maine, and creating that panic. And so I think paired with this message that this is very, very serious and unlike anything we've experienced before, is that people have some control over this by the choices that they make, their personal choices in social distancing, their how much they encourage the people they know who are resisting this to practice social distancing, take some control over the circumstance. Obviously, there are some recommendations on how you should plan and have enough food for a couple of weeks, have enough medicines for 3 months, but that shouldn't cause a rush on things like flour and toilet paper. And if people can balance their understandable anxiety about this disease with a sense of taking control of their own fate by doing these things and helping control the fate of their neighbors and members of their community, that can help. And I think it's really important to explore ways to maintain good mental health during a time like this as well. And there are a lot of things popping up online, suggestions of how you take good control of your mental health in a time where anxiety is very high.
Noah, how are your staff holding up?
They're as anxious as everybody else, as you might imagine. Healthcare workers are on the front line. They are, heroic in their willingness to continue to care for people in all the ways that we're able to. We're expanding access to telehealth and telephonic support for our patients and for others, including mental health services. Our staff are concerned. They're worried about the supply line for personal protective equipment, as anybody would be. But it isn't deterring them from carrying out the mission of PCHC. And I know that's true in all of the healthcare organizations in this area and across the state. We get a lot of feedback from them as a leadership team, and we work to do our best to act on that feedback in a meaningful way. You can imagine it's a dynamic situation, and decision-making has to be adjusted on even an hourly basis based on information and feedback that we're getting. And I would say they've also been very patient with us as a leadership team.
I'm no expert on infectious disease, but I've been reading a lot lately. Miles, maybe you have too. This started in China. It migrated to Europe, as predicted. It's making its way to the UK, where they are now taking serious precautions, even more stringent precautions than what we've seen in Bangor and Brunswick, by the way. Is what's happening over there inevitable for us over here, Dr. Nesson?
It depends on how we act now. So, we've got the third most cases in the world in the United States now. So, and I think we have to not be lulled into a sense of complacency because the numbers still remain relatively small in Maine. There are very significant testing restrictions. So people with mild disease and people who are asymptomatic, and people even with moderate disease who don't require hospitalization aren't necessarily getting tested here in Maine. And so the numbers are going to be lower than they than actually represented. It's probably reasonable to assume that for every positive confirmed case, there are 5 to 10 more people who have not been tested who have the disease. So everybody in Maine should choose their behavior based on the assumption that people around them have this disease. And if they're sick, I have a cold right now. I'm not very sick, but I have a stuffy nose and a mild cough, no fever. I'm self-quarantined. I don't need to go get tested, but I'm self-quarantined in order to prevent spreading this from other people in case it is COVID or even if it isn't, so that they're not using up healthcare resources and testing for what turns out not to be COVID.
What's the downstream implication for the disease? Once the curve is flattened and the number of new cases begin to drop off, as is happening in China, is there a probability of recurrence over a short period of time?
Well, there are two important questions in that. And the number of cases, actually, there aren't new cases in China these days. They've been flat for quite a few days now, which is good news. So there are two aspects of that. One is what happens when you start to ease the social restrictions and people start to interact again. Do you start to see a recrudescence of the virus? And we'll learn that from places like China and Korea, who are a little bit further on in this than we are, and that will help us. The other is the question of whether you develop a lasting immunity once you've been exposed to this disease. If that's the case, that would be really good, because as time goes by, if we can pace the rate at which our population gets this disease, increasingly you have a population of people who are immune to the disease, which makes it harder and harder for it to spread. And then lastly, thirdly, there's always a possibility, and we can hope, that as other coronaviruses have done in the past, that this one mutates in a way that makes it non-sustainable. Prior to developing a vaccine and prior to developing a proven treatment for the severe cases of this disease, there is a possibility, a hope, that it might mutate in a way that makes it not sustainable and it peters out on its own. Of course, we have no control over that, so we have to prepare for the opposite.
Next time you're on, we're going to ask the question about what happens when we return to being vacation land and someone from New York comes and visits us and this might start again. Can we save that question for the next time you're on with us?
You bet.
GHRT Rewinds, brought to you by your hometown real estate team, Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Thinking about selling your home? Call 629-9211 and start packing.